All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Wednesday, April 25th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, head on over to the site, DFSR.com/MLB. We'll get you the free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our great friends over at Lineup Lab, Optimal Lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB, NBA. While the season still goes on, my favorite team of all time, the Sixers, move on last night. Everyone knows that I've always been a Sixer fan since basically the day I was born, so riding high over here.
Family lives in Philly, by the way. He's not lying.
I got the geographic thing down to it, and I've just have basically been able to front run the two times that they've been into the finals, once with Iverson back in the early 2000s, and now happy to just pick up
16
the
year
again.
Break, get back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
Trusting the process, like, all that stuff.
I watched them with skepticism during the process, and now I want to just say I was a believer the entire time, and now they're going to, you know, maybe on their way to the finals again. So a Philly fan for life over here. That's my Twitter handle.
Well, few people know that we had a process like run in our score sheet league when we joined, and immediately jettisoned everyone, got mocked. Very similar. We should get together with Henke and discuss with him what it's like to be scorned in that way, because just like he did, we built an incredible roster. So
that's true. And I know people care about this, so I'm going to mention this real quick, because this is just good pod. The score sheet is simulated baseball, so if you've never played it, I would suggest go over and sign up, but then tell them you know us, and then maybe we'll end up buying it or something like that. But like but the score sheet is simulated baseball. We did the same exact thing where we joined a 16-team league and just gutted the entire thing and picked up like guys that were in high school at the time, because that was how deep the league went.
Clayton Kershaw, you may have heard of him.
Yeah, Kershaw when he was like 18. Rick Porcello when he was still in high school. So
Tim Lipscomb in college, he was really good, now he's bad. But, you know, it was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. And so I'm going to go back to this. These are the kind of brains you're working with when you sign up at DFSR.com/MLB. Like, this is the kind of – by the way, this league was for free, and we just lost money because you just had to pay the league fee every year, and there was no prizes. So if you feel like this is the kind of work ethic you want from two guys – that was before we got paid to do something. So now imagine how hard we work when we actually do get paid to do it. DFSR.com/MLB. We'll get you started. Two slates of baseball. We will talk a little bit about the early slate here because I think it's worth mentioning. And it has a couple interesting questions for a short slate of games, which I think are worth diving into just on a macro level. And then obviously we'll talk about some of the guys that are worth rostering here. But you have four games. They start at 2:10 Eastern. And you have a game at Coors. And I'm just going to start right off here. So on DraftKings, when you run lineups on our site, and we'll talk about who like some of the studs are. When you run lineups on our site, right now, you get John Gray in basically 100% of the lineups. He's 6,600 on DraftKings. He's facing the Padres. We've been down this road before one time earlier in the season when John Gray was in Coors facing the Padres. And things were actually looking pretty good for two innings. And then Clayton Richard, the pitcher, took him yard into like the upper deck. And then he was like completely tilted. And Carlos Asuage went yard off him too. Whatever, dude. I can't into the phonetics of every single person's name. It's impossible. There's 3,000 baseball players. My question here is, at what point is it correct to play a pitcher in Coors? We can talk about it as it relates to Gray here. But I guess I just more have a question on a macro level of, are there times, there have to be, right? Because if John Gray's a dollar, if Clayton Kershaw's, I'll use a different example. If Clayton Kershaw's a dollar in Coors, you would play him in Coors, right? So once you establish that premise as being true, and I think everyone would agree that was true, and then at some point there is a price for everybody, at what point you can play some of these guys with these run lines. Do you find it to be correct with Gray? Is it something that you kind of just want to generally avoid? Like, it would be less than you would consider anywhere else. I don't know. I guess I'm doing a poor job of asking the question, but when you see, I know you saw John Gray in the lineups when you ran him this morning and kind of just did like a little mouth puke kind of move. But when you look at some of the other names here and you look at his price and you look at the matchup, is it okay to just consider that he's in Coors? The system understands that he has a higher run line. I don't know. What are your thoughts here?
Well, I'm always going to start when it comes to seeing a guy in Coors with the slate size. So great. I'll just run through the boxes I'm hoping to check here. So check, it's a small slate, right? I'm also going to go ahead and just make sure our inputs are correct, because one of the things our system is going to have a difficult time doing is normalizing innings pitched for such an extreme ballpark difference. So, you know, any system is going to have kind of baseline projections that it builds upon and then try to build a profile for a given day. And Coors is just a very tricky place to build a pitcher profile for, because it's going to affect your innings pitched in a way that no other park will do, right? So, you know, he pitched against the Padres in the previous start, goes 7 innings, strikes out 7, no walks, walks right back in, gives up 10 hits, 6 Ks again, but 2 homers and 7 earned runs. But yeah, the two or fewer innings pitch is kind of what I'm keying in on there. And yeah, obviously it's a one game sample, so you don't want to go too crazy, but yeah, that's kind of the beginning piece. The next thing is, are there any other pitchers in the same kind of price range? Because oftentimes our system will be generally liking a lot of the other pieces on a short slate as well. So it's not as simple as just turning one knob and like taking Gray out, because then maybe you have a cascading problem where it kind of just like really screws up the lineups. Today, there's actually another option that I'll bounce off you real quick, which is Felix Hernandez. Hernandez is just $100 cheaper than Gray. Obviously, you know, he's got his own issues. Was actually pretty reasonable at Texas in his last start. And, you know, that's not quite as bad as pitching at Coors, but it's not a great spot either. He's been overall pretty decent in his last two starts. I think, like, for my money, Felix Hernandez for $100 cheaper pitching against the White Sox and James Shields seems like a better spot to me than trying to roll Gray back out there in Colorado.
Yeah, it's close. I mean, I think Gray's a much better pitcher. So it's like, so here's the thing. So let's look at a couple other boxes. If we're other things that the system factors into are implied runs against, and just like overall money line and stuff like that for the wins. It's a little less important on DraftKings with a win, but it still counts. Like, it still is going to give you some of those points. If you look at Gray versus Hernandez, if you just look at the Vegas implications for the game, they are Gray is a -160 favorite and Hernandez is a -140 favorite. So slight edge for Gray, not overwhelming. Implied runs against, though, White Sox 4.4, Padres 4.5. So the implied runs against are the same. And again, Vegas is incorporated that they're playing the ballpark differences, right? And by the way, Chicago's no dream park for pitchers either. That is not an extreme hitter's park, but it is definitely trends on the side of power. So it's not like Hernandez has a great matchup here. When you see those implied run lines, and again, we're not taking Vegas as law. It's not like saying that this is what they're going to score. It's just giving us an idea of where the final tally lands within a range, or like, you know, if run 1,000 times, this is where it would kind of land. Does that make you sway a little differently? Because Gray is just a better pitcher than Hernandez. Hernandez looks every bit of cooked to me, but I like. But
didn't you just get done telling us that Vegas has him slotted to give up fewer runs than Gray today?
By 0.1 runs. I mean, but like,
isn't that still fewer though? Like, I don't.
It's fewer.
Like,
it's
you brought
fewer,
up these other categories, but they favor Hernandez as well. And so being a better pitcher, is almost like a, it's too broad of a context, because like you could say Gray rates to have more strikeouts. That's more meaningful to me than, you know, being a quote unquote better pitcher, I guess. But
oh, apologies. That's what I mean when I say better pitcher. I'm referring strictly to the strikeouts. I'm saying that if the other factors are equal, then maybe I didn't. Okay, I didn't say this correctly. Then I'm more looking at that. I'm saying if all the other factors are basically tied, at that point, would you just rather take the strikeout piece of it, knowing that Gray is a favorite to just have more strikeouts just because that's in his profile? It's not overwhelming. I mean, he has not been a strikeout per inning guy so far this year. I mean, does that sway you at all, or you're still just kind of in the Hernandez camp?
Yeah, I don't know. It's very close, obviously. Like, I don't know that I can make a firm declaration. Like, one of the things I actually do want to do here is just look and see how pitching in Coors affects Gray's innings pitched. Just a quick and dirty look. Just as I'm scrolling as fast as I can through the game log from last season, I see one game where he pitched six innings or more at home last year, and a bunch of games where he was on the road and pitched seven innings. So that is not, or I'm sorry, he had pitched six innings at home several times, but more than six innings just once, pitched more than six innings several times on the road. So I do think there's an innings pitched issue there with Gray as well. Right now the projections are very, very close in our system. I agree that Hernandez is a worse pitcher overall. The strikeout stuff hasn't been terrible this season. I don't know. It's close enough to where when I'm going to pull the trigger on this going into game time, like, some piece of the psychological aspect of having a guy rolling out in Coors against a team, yes, that's been hitting very well, you know, in Coors especially, is, I don't know, it would be a tough one to stomach for me, I think.
Yep, I think that's mostly what it is. I think I'm wondering how much, and we can move on from this, but I think I do wonder how much that mental part of it does factor in. By the way, we have Gray going for 5.5 innings in this game, according to our system. So he's got a significant downgrade on his overall innings pitched, like what the baseline weighted mean average of what he's expected to do, just like ballpark neutral. 5.5 innings is lower than that. And I don't know, maybe it's not low enough. And this will be something that I kind of look at at least for the morning slate, the afternoon slate of games. And then the other guys, you do have Verlander and Scherzer pitching on this slate. We can talk about them briefly, sort of of in the same way and say both are electric arms. Scherzer is more expensive on DraftKings, 13-1 as opposed to Verlander, 12,000. So while I'm going to call Scherzer a better pitcher than Verlander, I don't think that's like a great declaration or anything like that, but you do have to pay more for him. Do you have a feeling about these two guys? You got a $500 savings on Verlander on FanDuel. Do you think Scherzer, just being the arm that he is, even at a little bit, even at an elevated price point, do you think it's worth it to roll him over Verlander, or is that maybe closer than I'm making it seem?
No, I'd rather play Scherzer, I think. I'm encouraged by the... I'm actually probably more bullish on Verlander than a lot of people. He was excellent last year. He's moving in with the Astros, and things continue to head in the right direction. Basically, he had a weird two-year hiatus from being a good pitcher, but I think all signs, now we have 240 innings of him being this really good pitcher again. This is 3 years now. Yeah, I think he's just back to being good. So I trust Verlander. But do I want to play him over Max Scherzer, who's probably one of the very best pitchers in all of baseball, in a really good hit pitcher's park against the Giants, who, you know, they're a righty heavy team that's also on the wrong side of the aging curve there. So yeah, I think from top to bottom, really, the matchup favors Scherzer. I think I can pay a little bit extra for him and not feel too uncomfortable about it. Really, the only metric that Verlander exceeds him on right now is the money line. So I guess he's slightly more likely to get the win, but yeah, I'm not gonna weigh that more heavily than pitching against a National League team, up against a worse lineup. So yeah, I'm a Scherzer guy today.
And here's the other problem, going back to the John Gray thing, just why our system is favoring him is because you do have two teams in very good spots here on this early slate. Like, you have the Rockies with an implied run line up and over 5.5. And then you have Seattle, too, against James Shields, who, if there was anything that, like, James Shields' last couple seasons have been outliers, that he's been bad, and maybe he was going to, like, turn it around at some point. We can basically lay that to rest. This guy is so bad. I don't even know. It's crazy to me. I mean, the White Sox seem to have a couple of these guys, but it's just crazy to me that these guys just get trot out onto the mound every 5 days. Like, this guy makes $75 million, by the way, over 4 years. So I guess you can divide it a little bit. But he gets to go out there every 5 days and pitch. He has, on the season, more walks than strikeouts in 23 innings. Not easy to do. Not easy for a major league pitcher to maintain his gig with five walks per nine, 4.24 strikeouts per nine. So when you look at these two teams, you are paying a little bit. You are paying for Seattle a little bit because their prices have come up a little bit. I can't say a little bit a bunch of times. And then you have Colorado, obviously, who are going to be as expensive as it comes on the slate. When that's factored in for DraftKings, does that make you maybe just want to go double cheap with guys like Gray and Fernandez, let's say? And that's because you know you're now rostering the two offenses that are clearly in the best spot today.
Well, definitely I don't want to go double cheap, I don't think. And I don't know who Fernandez is, but nonetheless, I still don't want to play whoever that is.
Oh, Felix Hernandez, I was combining.
It. So it's like a Brangelina thing, but it's just with one guy, both of one guy's names.
Everyone knew who I was talking about. All right.
I think... I do not think that's the direction you want to go, especially not for cash games, and really even for upside for big tournaments. The upside on these big pitcher names and their strikeout upside, I think, is just so much higher than guys like Felix Hernandez that I can't imagine not rolling one of the two for really any format.
Right now, if you look at our lineups, DraftKings has Scherzer and Gray in lineup two, and then basically just a Colorado and Seattle stack. David Dahl, if he's going to hit cleanup, is still too cheap on DraftKings at 3,500 in cores. That's a joke of a price. He'll be owned like nearly 100%, I would suspect. Even Ryan McMahon down near the bottom of the lineup. This is if you're looking to fit a double, at least one of the expensive arms. Ryan McMahon at 3,300. If he's even hitting the bottom of the lineup, I think you're fine there. And then you just roll through the Seattle top of the lineup with Segura, Gordon, Cano, Seager, maybe even Nelson Cruz. All these guys are 4,000 or less. I don't think you actually will have a problem fitting at least one of those expensive arms. And it's kind of the same way. You're kind of getting the same thing on FanDuel. Not as crazy because it's a little harder to fit some of those Coors bats, but I still think you can stack a couple of guys. And FanDuel, congratulations, finally puts David Dahl into their player pool after three games of him hitting in the middle of the lineup in Coors and not even being available. All right, before we get to the evening slate of games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. It's a great place to go and play the salary cap game format. It's salary format. How do you say this? The salary cap games that you're used to. Right on. Without having to play against sharks putting in hundreds of lineups. Really a wonderful place to play if you play like, you know, $5 to $100 per night. They also run really fun promotions from time to time. They do the Home Run Derby contest. I'm sure they'll have something for the All-Star game this year. You know, when football comes around, they run all sorts of really innovative stuff as well. And they run free rolls. So if you don't even want to deposit, you could still sign up over there. Keep your eyes peeled for the free rolls that they run, usually on bigger slates, you know, oftentimes Tuesday or Wednesday during baseball season. So yeah, check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
All right, let's tackle these evening slate of games, and we'll just start with Kershaw. The money line on Kershaw is the highest you are really ever going to see for a pitcher. He opens at a -360 against the Marlins. It makes sense. He's great. The Marlins stink. Like we said with Maeda, we talked about Maeda yesterday as being a good pitcher, and that. So with Kershaw, my only concern here is pitch count again. Like we talked with Maeda about pitch count yesterday, feel like he's pretty safe after throwing over 100 pitches, and then Dave Roberts pulls him at 82 pitches in a game where he had 7 strikeouts, allowed 1 run, and had gone 6 innings. Like, how are we worried at all, or like, are we worried at all about pitch count with Kershaw, or does he like just fit a different sort of narrative, and we don't need to? Because I mean, obviously, if he's not 100% play, I don't know what to tell you. But at this point, I guess we're just talking about GPP upside as well. Let's just start there. One, are you worried about the pitch count? Two, can you imagine anyone fading them in cash, like at this money line and in this matchup? And three, and then we can talk about some of the how they've priced him here on FanDuel and DraftKings.
Yeah, I mean, so Kershaw's pitched 7 innings in each of his first 3 starts. So pitch count or no, like if you're going to get a pretty solid 7 innings out of him, then I don't think you can worry about it too much. And it's really, I mean, DraftKings, I guess there's a discussion to be had. It's a little bit closer, but FanDuel, the price is just comically low. I mean, 11-4.
It's a joke.
Against one of the worst offenses in baseball. It's just a typo. I think it was supposed to be 14-1. Like, I think they just mixed up the 1 and the 4. I'm serious. Like, right now in our system, how many points is this? Is like, if you X Kershaw out, how many points lower is that lineup right now?
11 points.
11 points.
I mean, that's something like 8%. It's like an 8% downgrade or something like that. It's an 8% downgrade off the total amount of points in the lineup. It's like,
right. So that implies that he's basically $3,000 too cheap. Like, just for frame of reference, that's how many fantasy points we have. Yasiel Puig slated to score tonight, or Mike Moustakas, guys that are in our top overall lineup. So, it's a comically bad price. There's really nothing to say. I mean, he should be 100% owned for cash games and FanDuel. And if you don't want to play him for GPPs, I get it. Just because you're going to get significant separation going in some other direction, and there are some other, I guess, reasonable arms. I mean, we saw last game, Kershaw doesn't necessarily score the most fantasy points in every single start that he has. But yeah, for cash games, there's no discussion to be had. He must be played there.
These are the slates I really like to play, especially in cash, because there will be a percentage of person that does not walk in
rake payers
lineup lock with him as their pitcher. And like, so I always think, you know, what's he going to be, 90% owned? He'll be like 79% owned or something like that. Like, he'll be something way lower than you would ever expect, and that's right around the rake line. So these are the slates I like to just sort of have a little bit more on the line for, because this is such a clear A to B that it's like, and it's just not even close. It's a joke. We'd have to lower him something like 22% off of his right now base projection to get him to have him not be in FanDuel lineup one. And that's just, you're right, it's a total mistake and it's a total joke. It's even at 14,000. At 14,000, he's still 5 points up on the next closest line, because this is just what an insane matchup you're getting. You're getting the very best of all worlds. You're getting the best pitcher, well, let's say one of the best pitchers, like a total elite arm, with the highest money line you're likely to see on the season, unless he faces this team again and like improves over this time. Like, if he's just still Kershaw and like the Marlins get an injury in the middle of the lineup, maybe you see a -400. Other than that, you're just gonna, these are just crazy lines. Anyway, total joke of a price. I think he's probably should be 100% owned on both sides. If he's not, then more power to you if you, and you should, roster him in cash. After him, if you want to, we do need to roster a starting pitcher too on DraftKings. And if we wanted to pivot into some of them with, I don't know, reasonable upside on FanDuel, where are we looking here to sort of round out our lineups?
Yeah, I'll start pitcher two on DraftKings, because I actually think this is fairly clear-cut as well with Jake Arrieta. He's just 8,500. We have 3 straight seasons now of Arrieta being this kind of new, not quite as good version of himself, but still plenty effective. 8 Ks per 9 this year, 3 walks per 9. Coming off last year's 8.7 Ks per 9 and 3 walks per 9. I think it's fairly safe to say that even in his age 32 season here, that he's maintaining the same level of effectiveness. the Phillies today are going up against the Diamondbacks. So, you know, on some level, not an amazing matchup, but the game only has a 7 total. And going up against Greinke means it's basically a pick 'em. So I guess you don't get quite the money line that you're hoping for. But again, just the simple effectiveness of the pitcher at that price point and the other options, because I think, you know, there are some other pretty good pitchers going today. You're really not going to be able to pair them with Kershaw very effectively just on a price basis. So I think for my money, Kershaw and Arrieta seem like a really good duo for me on DraftKings.
Yeah, I think it makes it easy because I don't mind Greinke too, but I think you get just the $1,500 savings you get from Greinke, because I think Greinke and Arrieta are like in the same class for me in terms of just, I don't know, their pitcher makeup, let's say. You know, they're right around a little less than a strikeout per inning guy. Greinke's been a little bit better on the walks this season. Arrieta's XFIP is a little lower. He was like lights out his last start. I think the price difference is just really what tells the whole story there. If one was a little more favored or whatever, I think, they were the same price, I think it'd be a much closer decision, because we actually have Greinke for like just a few, like one more DraftKings point than Arrieta, but that's not enough to make up the price difference or what kind of savings you get elsewhere. I don't mind Trevor Bauer in this spot. I'm with you that I'd rather play Arrieta, I think. But I don't mind Bauer. The run line is pretty low. Cleveland's a -20 favorite. It's an 8 over under. The wind looks like it's really blowing in Cleveland, for 15 miles an hour straight in, which will help a guy like Bauer, who I believe is more of a fly ball pitcher than ground ball. Overall though, I think I'm with you that I'd rather take Arrieta. But I am a Trevor Bauer fan here. Strikes out a batter per 9. Walks are a little bit up there, but he's coming off probably his best season in the majors last year. So, I favor Arrieta. Would not be surprised.
Yeah, exactly. I think for big tournaments, Bauer, Greinke even. I think you can go Greinke in the same direction there. It's just like, again, all things being equal here, Arrieta, lower overall total, a hair worse on the money line. I think just the general matchup gives me less of the heebie-jeebies. I think it's enough favored in Arrieta's direction, and he's cheaper too. It's enough favored in Arrieta's direction that it's not that close for me for cash.
Yeah, agreed. And it just helps move the needle. Then again, he's like 500 cheaper at minimum.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference when you drop 14K on Kershaw.
Oh, exactly. All right, let's talk about some of the offenses in good spots here. You mentioned we have a 7 over under with a -105 on either side of the Arizona Philly. We have the exact opposite going on in Texas, where it's -105 with a 10 over under. That's what happens when you get Doug Fister and Kendall Graveman. Though I will say, Doug Fister, Oakland's supposed to put up some runs here, right around the 5 range, a little short of 5 because Texas is slightly favored here. But Fisher's not been terrible the last two seasons, like 8.5 Ks per 9 over the last 2 years. Walks are over 3, so you're not too enamored with that. XFIP for the last two seasons combined, right around 4. Do you think that this is a ballpark thing? Because he's like, I get why Vegas goes in this direction sometimes with some of these run lines, but there are some pitchers where I get a little... I mostly get worried about it when there's a pitcher on one side of it that actually can strike guys out, right? Like we saw this with Triggs last night a little bit. I get a little worried when there's the high run lines. There's been times like we face the guys against Luis Castillo. When there are pitchers that have some strikeouts in their makeup, those are the kind of high run lines that I don't like to always run into, if that makes sense, because I think that there can be downside because those strikeouts just take so much off the table if it's in terms of just overall rally killers, right? Like it's just the easiest way to get out of innings by not putting the ball in play. So when you see, I'm less concerned with on the Graveman side, but when you see Oakland with this kind of run line against a guy like Fister, who's been perfectly average, right? He's been maybe even a little bit above average over the last two seasons. Does that make you wary of maybe rostering that side of the implied runs?
I don't think so. I mean, as I look at Fister, we were talking about this earlier. I see the 104 innings that he's been pretty effective here. I also see that he's 34 years old, so he's going to be an underdog to have improved dramatically over his performance prior to that. And then I go back to 2016, 2015, the guy was a 5.5 Ks per 9 guy. So unless he's like really figured something out, and again, one of those seasons was with the Astros, who historically have actually been quite good at helping pitchers figure things out, as we've seen with like 3 guys this season. So I don't know that, like in my mind, we have Fister as a true talent 7 Ks per 9 guy. That sounds about right to me, in spite of whatever we've seen so far over the last two seasons. It's at Texas, so terrible pitcher's park, excellent hitter's park. He's still giving up a lot of hard contact this season. I'm willing to trust this one. I'm a lot more wary. I agree with you that when you have pitchers with high K totals, even if they have like it reminds me of like the old like Jonathan Sanchez or say like Robbie Ray, right? Where it's like, yeah, he might walk five guys per nine, but he might also just strike every single guy out or get all the strikeouts when the bases are loaded or whatever, right? I don't really picture Fister in the same way as those like young guys with tons of Ks, but you know, a lot of flaws elsewhere. I think he's just still kind of a generic guy, and being at Texas is a big needle tipper here. Kendall Graveman, by the way, just going the other direction, he's truly really bad. The ERA is 10 this year. That's obviously like somewhat unlucky, but giving up 2.8 home runs per nine, 6.5 walk Ks per nine, 3 walks per nine, he's just the very definition of just a guy and on the bad side of that. And so, you know, you have both Fister and Graveman going here. And really the issue as well is like after those guys, we mentioned a lot of guys on the pitching side of things. There's not really that many terrible pitchers going tonight. There's a lot of names you're going to recognize, you know, that we haven't even mentioned yet. That, you know, they're nothing special, but like John Lester, you know, you probably don't want to take guys hitting against him. You know, Steven Matz, like just pretty
Eduardo Rodriguez is good. Like, yeah, Rodriguez.
Exactly. Yeah. Just a lot of guys that you're like Aaron Sanchez, you know, not the best pitcher in the world, but like, do I really want to stack guys against him, you know? And so as you go through, you get enough guys like that to where you're like, you start running out of options pretty quick, I guess. So the game with by far the highest total, the two teams with, I think, by far the highest implied run totals on this team, like it's going to be hard not to wind up stacking them in some capacity.
By the way, Robbie Ray, you mentioned him a second ago, just to go back, because he pitched yesterday. He had the most Robbie Ray-like performance of his career last night. So he goes 4 2/3, so can't even get through the fifth, but strikes out 11 guys. Takes him 107 pitches to get through 4 2/3, strikes out 11 and walks 3 during that time. I was kind of like sort of in the background following along with that, and it was just every batter was like 6 pitches, 7 pitches. Then he'd get the strikeout. So it's like one of these guys where the K per nines look amazing, and then you're like, the guy just simply can't even get through 5 innings because he's all over the place. The only thing I like to look at with guys like Fister is if there's been some kind of marked change for a guy in his peripherals, or you know, one season to the next, and we would say it's a pretty dramatic one. Increasing your Ks 3 per 9 over the, you know, season over season is what I would consider to be dramatic. There are two changes for him that have come about in the last 2 years. One, he's throwing his slider a lot more than he ever has in the past, throwing his curveball less, has completely abandoned the changeup, which is something he threw. So like in his early in his career, he threw the changeup 13 and somewhere between 13 and 15% of the time. Now it's only 6% of the time. So he said no to the changeup, throws the fastball a lot more. So sometimes I do like to look and see if they have just changed their approach. I'm with you that he probably is not this type of pitcher, but there are some pitch FX stuff that, and he's actually throwing a little harder too for his career. He'd average under a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Now it's 91.5 on average. So he has just added velocity as well in his old age, which is another kind of weird thing to see. So very rarely pitchers just become a new guy this late in their career. And there are a couple of things that do stand out to him and say, huh, maybe he has made some kind of just mechanics change that's allowing him to throw a little harder and abandon some of these other pitches. We mentioned Oakland and Texas. I think we agree that we like the Texas side of that matchup a little bit better against Graveman. You mentioned how there are a lot of good pitchers. I mean, even guys like Feria is throwing out there. One team I don't mind stacking a little bit is the Pirates here against Matthew Boyd. This is a doubleheader. Right now, Boyd is listed as the evening starter. I like this matchup a lot better if it's actually Boyd on there and not Zimmerman, even though Zimmerman's awful too. Mostly because I just like some of these lefty bats at the top. These righty bats. Like I like Sean Rodriguez coming cheap on a night where if you're trying to save money and roster Scherzer, he's getting another pretty cheap. Jordy Mercer at times hits near the top of the lineup against lefties. So I'm just mostly looking. Matthew Boyd is a pretty weak arm, and they have some splits guys near the top of the lineup that you can get away with cheap on a night where you're probably going to want to spend a lot on pitching. Anything else we missed here from the evening slate of games before we get out of here?
Nah, man, I think that was pretty comprehensive.
Oh, thanks, buddy. That was again A+ for comprehensiveness. I was gonna say comprehension, but that would mean we understood each other. All right, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com/MLB. We'll get you that free 3-day trial. We'll be back again Friday talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy Clayton Kershaw Day on Wednesday.
Peace.